Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators, but no one compares.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
One, two, three, four!
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour podcast. Three women, one podcast and a whole load of badass. With me, Harriet Minter, Emma Sexton, and Natalie Campbell. So this is where we bring you some of the highlights from our radio show on Talk Radio. And this week, we meet daytime TV exec turned author Helen Warren. She is the woman who launched Loose Women. So if you want all the backstage gossip, or you just want to know how to write a bestseller, then stay tuned.
We are joined in the studio by Helen Warner, author extraordinaire and also the creator of legendary show Loose Women. We're going to be coming here for all the gossip. Helen, welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
You are here primarily to talk about your new book, She, which we thoroughly enjoyed. It is in the kind of canon of really good, slightly creepy women thriller books, isn't it?
I love that description.
might borrow that. Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, it is. I've taken a departure with this one. So my first four books were commercial women's fiction, and which I loved writing. And then I'm not quite sure why I took this turn to the dark side. But now that I'm there, I'm never going back to the light side, because it's so much fun to write it. It's so good. And so yeah, she's Bella.
Bella, your main character,
is quite a character.
She's called Bella. She is beautiful, but she's not a beautiful person,
no,
really, is she?
She's far from it.
What did you have to do to kind of get into the mind of, you know, when you're creating a character as an author, you have to know their whole story and how they got to where they are now. How did you do that with Bella?
Well, I don't really do that as an author. I make it up as I go. I literally make it up as I go along. So with Bella, I knew where I was going with it, because everyone knows a Bella. So this is my pitch for the, you know, book. When I was telling my publisher that I wanted to write it, everyone knows a Bella. Some of us might even be a Bella. And if you're really unlucky, Bella has married into your family. Because I've had so many friends and relatives and whatever who've had the experience of a woman marrying into their family and destroying it. And so I find it really fascinating. I've got a lot of friends who have got sons, and it's their biggest fear is that, you know, somebody will come along who hates them, hates the rest of the family, and is going to put a bomb under that family and will happily enjoy watching it explode.
It's so really interesting, isn't it? Because you're saying it, I can definitely think of male friends that I had who disappeared. You know, got a girlfriend and disappeared. And then I can also think of my girlfriends who have married somebody and gone, yeah, your family or mine, I think we're going to go mine.
Yeah, it's so common.
And just sort of very subtly, not they're never seeing their own family, but not as often
not really.
As they did.
I know. And it's so hard for the the families, actually. It is kind of quite a serious thing. And I mean, the timing of the book, a lot of people have said, oh, well, it's clearly, you know, you've modelled it on Meghan Markle. Mm, and, it's really unfair because Meghan, of course, is not the sort of monster that Bella is. But there is that kind of where you see a situation where Harry has actually moved away from his family. Yeah. I mean, I like Meghan, but, you know, Harry has... She has come in and he has moved away from his family and there clearly has been a rift. And it's not necessarily her fault, but it's just an interesting kind of peg for me. quite a helpful
quite
one,
helpful one.
Quite frankly. Yeah. And the other thing that's been really helpful is that Charlotte, who's the ex-girlfriend, who dumped Ben and left him brokenhearted, she has a role to play. And so when I saw Brad and Jen last week, you know, getting ready, getting back together, I was thinking, God, that's quite a helpful peg as well there, because, you know, sort of getting back with the, after a really traumatic time with another one that he went off with. It's sort of, you know, it's interesting how it's kind of all worked out beautifully, actually.
Do you think for authors today, you have to be aware of how you're going to promote your book as well as just write it? Because listening to you talk, you're so on it. You're like, oh, that fits. I'm going with this one. Oh, what about this?
Well, that's probably, to be honest, that's my background.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my background's TV. Then I will always be thinking of what's the hook? Where would you go with it? And, you know, I think as a journalist as well, you're thinking from journalist's point of view, how what stories could they write about it? And there are loads of sort of spin-offs from this, whether it's the daughter-in-law from hell or whether it's the what happens when your friends hate your partner or you hate your friend's partner. So there's lots of, you know, I'm always thinking about what ideas there are, but I think that's probably because of my background. And the other thing that I'm always thinking of as well is the idea of the big screen, you know, how this is going to look, because I think this would...
Oh, yeah.
Is that always at the back of your mind? Is that really what you'd love to be doing?
It's my dream.
Yeah.
It's my absolute dream. And so when I left ITV, it was to write a book that will be a screenplay. That's kind of my goal and my dream. So I'm... You know, say fingers crossed.
Yeah, keep saying it.
One of the things we wanted to ask you about was this book you write under H.C. Warner.
Yeah.
And that's the first time you've done that.
Yes.
And it is a departure in terms of style for you. Why the change of name?
Well, because my first four were all commercial women's fiction, and as I was saying earlier, and then this one is so different. And I think the publisher felt that it would be a good way of sort of marking that departure and, you know, showing how different it is. And I think it's worked really well because it shouldn't put men off, you know, if it's a female writer. And I'm sure it doesn't put them off, but certainly
bless you for saying that, yes.
But I think, you know, with it, this is a book and I've been so pleased with the reviews have been really fantastic, but what I've loved is how many men love it.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously I'm delighted that women love it too, but how many men really have really, really loved it? And I don't know that they would necessarily have picked it up if it was Helen Warner.
I think that's really true. And I think it's also interesting because in a way this is quite a male subject.
Yes.
You know, this idea that, and we've all been on dates where you've said, so tell me a little bit about your ex, and then suddenly you're launched into the story of the psycho that tried to lure them away and, you know, faked pregnancy and all that jazz.
Yeah.
I've dated some joys. But, you know, they all have that story somewhere, so they must be seeing themselves in it a bit.
There was a friend today who'd read it and texted me and said, oh my God, this just is my story. You know, I'm seeing my, obviously, I'm sure not the ending. Well, I hope not the ending, but, it, you know, or kind of the twists and stuff. But he was saying it just rings so many bells. And I think I've been really pleased by how realistic people say that that depiction of, you know, it is quite dark and it does get quite dark. But I'm pleased how well it's gone down, that people have felt that it was an a sort of realistic depiction of it.
How different was it, though, writing this book full-time versus the other four that you were writing in between your full-time job?
Yeah, I wrote them on the train to work.
Wow. It was really hard.
Doing it full-time?
Yeah,
okay. So much easier on the train.
Was it? Okay.
Because if you're writing full-time, you will start the day, and you get up with the best intentions, but you'll start the day and think, well, I'll just read the entire internet before I, you know, just do this, and then I'll... And then, you know, there's a delivery and, you know, my son will ring and
cleaning.
Say, you know, he's forgotten something at school and I have to go and get that, and or my daughter will be... You know, there's always something crops up, and it makes it really, really hard to focus and concentrate. So being a full-time writer, I think, is unbelievably hard.
Okay.
I found it incredibly hard.
Right. That's so interesting, because I would have thought, yeah, but then if you wrote four books on the way to
work... Well, because there's a rhythm to that. You get on the train at a certain time.
You've got a certain amount of time to write.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you know, if you're a fast typist, as I am, you can write, you know, 1,000 words each way. Mm-hmm. So 2,000 words a day is 10,000 words a week.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can kind of race through a book, and it's just that there's something about being on a train as well. The train's moving forward and you're moving forward with the story, and you're moving forward with there's something about it. I mean, I did slightly consider during my time writing full time, just getting on the train.
Yeah. And also, I suppose you're on the train. When you're out of the house, you can't get distracted by anything. Mm-hmm. And if you're on the train, it's dead time. What else are you going to do? Sit and stare out the window.
Well, I do also obviously read the entire internet when I'm on the train as well. But you could be a bit more disciplined about it. And it's easier to be more disciplined because you're not being distracted. So I did consider getting on the train, but then I sort of thought, well, you're only fooling yourself, you know, it's kind of, and you know, am I really going to just spend 8 hours going up and down between Colchester and London, you know, and it's quite an expensive thing as well, actually. It'd be cheaper to get an office somewhere.
Sort your procrastination out.
Yeah.
I was listening to, author who wrote One Day, David Nichols. David Nichols. Yeah. He's a real hero of mine. He's fabulous. I was listening to an interview with him. And he was saying how actually he's got to the point now where he's making enough money as an author. Well done, David. that he rents he has a whole separate flat round the corner from his own flat. Oh. So in the mornings he gets up, gets dressed, has breakfast with the kids, leaves his flat, goes round the corner to another flat, and goes to work.
Yeah,
yeah. And that's how he writes. And sometimes he gets there and has a nap on the sofa.
I know myself well enough to know that I would just do exactly the same in the other flat that I would do in my own home. So actually, that wouldn't work for me. I just know I'm not disciplined.
Oh, I feel your pain. We are going to keep talking to Helen here on Badass Women's Hour, particularly all about her career up until the point she became a writer. If you want the secret scoop on the life of a daytime TV exec, think about some of the people that she's met. that will be coming up next here on Badass Women's Hour.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This is the Badass Women's Hour podcast. You can get in touch on all the socials on at Badass Women's Hour. Now, let's get back to our guest.
Helen, obviously you were the creator. You launched Loose Women.
I did.
And it is, I mean, it's still really the only female-focused show anywhere on TV,
yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah.
How did it, when you first turned up and you said to your bosses, I've got this idea, what was the response?
Well, I didn't have the idea, to be completely honest. It was a lady called Andrea Wamphor, who was very senior at Granada at the time. She sadly died a few years ago, but she was an amazing woman and she really had a good sense of what would work and what wouldn't. And she'd seen The View in America. And she said we should do something like this here. So several people tendered for it, and so there were several shows that pitched for it, and Loose Women was one of, I think, five. And we won because we were the best. So when it when we started, as I say, it was just, you know, it was kind of me and Claire Eli, who was my friend and producer and whatever. So we were just in an office together. So it was just really the two of us. And then we gradually sort of built up the team. But it was, I mean, the early days of Loose Women were really hard because there were days when we had 9 people in the audience and we had such a great director. And I'd say, we've got 9 people in the audience. And he'd say, it's okay, I'll shoot round it. And he did. He did a really brilliant job of shooting round it and not making it obvious. He probably put a bit of fake applause or whatever in and to make it look and sound like there were more people there. So it was, we only had a commission when we launched for a month. It was a month's commission. So we did the month and they'd said, you need to hit 30% by the end of the month, which
30%
was...
30% of what? Of
share.
Right,
of
okay,
viewing.
Of viewing, right.
So,
yeah.
Which was quite a high target back then. And but we did it on the last day, actually, of that month. And it sort of, it grew by kind of word of mouth and, you know, people started to get into it. And we stayed such good... the beginning, it was, the first show was Jane Moore... Karen Brady, Nadia Sawala and Kay Adams. And we've all stayed really good friends all these years. You know, I'm still, you know, in lots of touch with them. We went out last week because it was 20 years.
Yeah.
And so it was so lovely because I found out I was pregnant with my daughter the day before we launched Loose Women. So I always know how old she is. So it's 20th anniversary. She will be 20 in April. And kind of so we did that first month and then it got another commission for, I think it was 3 or 4 months. And then we, so I was really heavily pregnant. So Alice, my daughter, was due on the 16th of April. And the series ended on the 20th.
Wow.
So I was in the gallery on the 20th, 4 days past her due date. And they'd had to kind of, because I couldn't get too close to the, you know, desk, because I had this enormous, enormous butt. I mean, I put on 5 stones. I was absolutely huge.
Wow.
And so I couldn't get very close. So they'd got me an earpiece and, you know, so I didn't have to get too close. And so I finished. And she was born, you know, several days later. She was 2 weeks late, thankfully.
Imagine you sitting there with your legs crossed, being like, not today. Just hang on in there.
Yeah.
What was it like? What was your initial aim for the show?
It was, well, all right, being completely honest, it was to rip off The View, because that was really good. And so, but do a British version of The View. And so I think we achieved that quite successfully. But at the beginning, it was, you didn't see smart, funny women, loose women, when it started.
You'd
be howling with laughter. Yeah. And Catherine Flett from The Observer, I think at the time, did a review of it, and it said, in the wrong hands, this would be awful, but it's really good, and it's really, you know, really well. Anyway, we had that laminated because we were so happy with that review. And it did us a lot of good. I think people thought it would have been accepted in the broadsheets, and, you know, there's so much snobbery around daytime TV. There always has been, always will be. But so it was really, so it was kind of, it was to be TV for women, made by women. And we definitely achieved that.
Do you think Loose Women is a more feminist show now? Do you think it's changed over the years where it's, probably just gone, changed a bit more? Do you think they tackle more serious feminist topics now?
No, I don't actually. I think when it started, it was quite, it was always, the thing about Loose Women is that it is actually quite a simple premise. It's topical debate from a female perspective. So we would cover everything, you know, that was it. If it was in the news, we would cover it. And so we did lots of serious stuff. And there was a period in sort of a few years ago where it did go very light and it went very... But that was, you know, it was popular. Yeah. It did really, really well. And it was very successful still. So I don't think... So I think it changed a bit then, but I think it's kind of come back to what it was, which was just topical debate from a female perspective.
Do you think we're always going to need a Loose Women? Or do you think there'll be a time where we don't actually need a women-only focus show?
Oh, God, that's such a good question. I think, I hope we always need a Loose Women, really. I think, you know, people have always said, well, what about Loose Men? You know, why don't you have a men show? You know, a men show. But
we get that. Well, it's Badass Men's Hour. Like,
but there are a lot of shows that are presented by men. So I actually, and I just think people are very, again, there's an awful lot of snobbery about it, but Loose Women is a really awesome show. And if it wasn't, it would not have lasted 20 years. Odd years and be still being, you know, one of the most successful shows in the daytime lineup. So I hope it continues forever, really.
You have sort of done pretty much all of the big daytime TV shows.
Yeah.
This Morning, yeah. Good Morning Britain, you know, for better or worse. They've paid my mortgage, so I'm happy. But what is it about daytime TV that, as you said, it can be so snobby about? And yet, at its best, is an incredible insight into actually what everyone out there in the UK is thinking and feeling.
Yeah, I think, well, there are a couple of things that I love live. I love the, you know, immediacy of live TV, always have. And I think I understand as a viewer, because I watch a lot of telly, and a lot of executives don't, but I do. And I've also been on maternity leave and I've been at home with the children, and I know what I need and what I want. So I think that makes me a better commissioner, because I know if I was at home, I understand what I would want to see. And so I think if you can do a lot of very good and successful execs have come from daytime TV, because if you can do, you know, some of those shows are really, really hard. Yeah. And it's extraordinarily difficult sometimes. And there were plenty of times when I was absolutely, especially on This Morning in Liverpool, and, you know, it was so tough. But I knew even at that time, I remember thinking, if I can do this, I can do anything. And it's sort of true.
What was tough about it?
It was so hungry. The show is so hungry. We were in Liverpool, which was tricky. Cause you had
to
get guests up.
Who was the guy who did the weather and used to jump around on the map? I just remember.
We don't talk about Fred anymore. He's currently at Her Majesty's pleasure.
Oh, right.
But anyway, so... but, yes, moving swiftly on.
Sorry.
So, but, yeah, we were in Liverpool, so we were a bit cut off. It was difficult to get guests. And so a lot of items fell down. This Morning is a long show, and it's very hard to kind of you know, every day come up with ideas and make sure nothing, you know, goes wrong or falls down or a guest doesn't drop out. And if a guest drops out, you're just there. I mean, most of the teams were there all night. And this is before, it was long before the internet and it was long before mobile phones and all, you know what I mean? And we were so... It was really hard.
It would have been really, yeah.
It was really
hard. I can't
imagine,
actually.
But I did know that I would never have anything that, I would never do anything that hard again. And I never have. That was definitely the hardest.
Harder than
writing. Most fun.
But something about that camaraderie as well.
Yeah.
So whenever I go into either Good Morning Britain or Lorraine or what, any of them, you can tell that everybody has been there all the way through the night and they're firing on coffee and they are all desperately trying to make the whole thing work together. And honestly, they are some of the loveliest teams that I've worked with because of that.
They are. It is. I mean, it's just, it's, I've worked with some fantastic people and they, you know, I believe they're the best in TV because I'm not snobby about daytime TV because I know how hard it is. And, you know, people who think it's easy screw it up because it's not easy. It's really, really hard. And they underestimate how hard it is. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they just make a mess of it if they go into it thinking, well, I could do that easily. It's, you know, it's just not the case. It's really tough.
What was it like to do that as a career for so many years and then make the decision, okay, my time here is done. I'm going to go and focus on my writing.
It was not the first time I've done it. But the first time I did it was at Channel 4. I was at Channel 4. And so I'd been there 5 years. For me, 5 years feels the right time to be anywhere because I think you become a bit lazy and a bit kind of you don't have the same hunger at all. And you know, in the case of ITV... When I joined, daytime was not in a good place and we had Daybreak and, you know, a lot of the shows were struggling and there weren't, you know, we didn't have Tipping Point and The Chase. And so Rinder was a new one for me, Tenable and James Martin and all these. But anyway, by the end of 5 years, it was in a good place. We'd launched Good Morning Britain. I'll go back on something I said earlier. I said that this morning was the hardest. Launching Good Morning Britain.
I can't even begin to imagine, I have to say.
I've ever done in my career. That was so hard. It was because the press were desperate to strangle it at birth.
Yeah.
And it was it was a real case of have your vision, lead from the front and hold your nerve. Mm. But it was hard sometimes. And I used to actually open the ratings in the toilet because I was like shaking. So it is very, very, you know, tough sometimes.
Yeah.
But so it was all doing well. Everything was firing. I'd been there 5 years and I thought my dream, as I said, is to be, you know, a screen. I want to get my fiction onto the big screen or the small screen because Netflix I think it would really suit a Netflix series or whatever. So I just thought sometimes you just got to jump and, you know, and I have a very supportive husband and family who all, you know, were completely up for it. So hopefully it's paid off, but I will be going back into TV because I can't write full time.
Yeah.
I just can't. I've got to get on the train again.
And also, you need that train journey to get the next book done, don't you?
Yeah.
Helen, thank you so much for joining us and chatting to us all about your incredible career and your new book. She by Helen, but also H.C. Warner, is out now. It is a great read. We thoroughly recommend it. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Badass Women's Hour. If you like the show, then help more people find us. You can tag us or talk to us on social media using @BadassWomen'sHour. Or you can be really lovely and leave us a review and a rating. 5 stars, please. It helps boost us up the podcast rankings and allows other people to find us. We'll be back next week with more badass guests and in-depth chat.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues. your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.